Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And Ray Hunt. Find me on Twitter at Moscow Mush, my co-host Ray Hunt at RayHunt84. Follow the show at Number Podcast on Twitter, In That Number Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you've got any questions for the show, if you can be bothered, send us an email to InThatNumberPodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share, subscribe, and give us good vibes. Let's go.
Welcome to a special episode of In That Number. This is episode 174. Proud to be part of the Sports Social Network. A rather unusual one for us today. In the previous 173 episodes, we've covered everything Saints. Today, we'll be straying off that topic as Nathan Jones prepares his troops for another project restart. Instead, we have England versus USA. A special fixture for us here at ITN. A lot of our loyal listeners are from across the pond, so we feel we cannot let this fixture just slide without giving it the attention it deserves. So it's England versus USA, it's World Cup 2022, and it's definitely coming home. With me today, representing England in the white and red corner, we have the Moscow Mush, Kevin Milverton. How are you, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm all right.
This is the World Cup, Kev, come on.
This is the least excited I've ever been for a World Cup.
Yeah, I think it's the whole things that, you know, the cloud that's hanging over it and the fact that it's in the winter doesn't help, but yeah.
And how England have fared in the last two have just put me off.
Yeah, we'll get more into that, into the Nations League in a bit, but yeah, I see your point. And in the red, white and blue corner, we have, of course, Tim Bazant. T. Bizzle, how are you doing, Tim?
Life is grand here in good old US of A. The week of Thanksgiving, so short week for all of us.
And it's also my birthday week as well. On Thanksgiving.
Well, I will be celebrating by sticking a drumstick in my mouth, thanks to you.
Yeah. But yes, it wouldn't be fair for two Englishmen to gang up on the American. So to even the sides up a bit, we have the host of Blue Shirts Breakaway and friend of the show, I hope anyway, especially after this, Greg Kaplan. Greg, how are you feeling?
Oh, well, you cannot write a script like this one. It's World Cup year.
Yes, I can't believe it. I mean, it was just when the draw was made for this, I was so excited about it. But yeah, England versus USA, amazing. But guys, how are we feeling about the World Cup in general? Because, you know, it's upon us now. It's got kind of snuck up, didn't it? And starting under that massive cloud that I mentioned. And I know people that, you know, the people are choosing to boycott it. You know, that's fine. But yeah, what are your thoughts on the controversies that have dragged this tournament into the mud?
Oh, Christ. I mean, you know, starting with the choice of the location for a number of reasons, it's outrageous, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, logistically, from a human rights perspective, and it's mind-boggling. But yet we're here. It's 2022 already. It's happening. Yeah, there's not much the teams can do about it. Nobody decided to boycott it. Christ, it starts in about an hour and a half, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. That humdinger of a game, Qatar against Ecuador.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be sold out.
First and foremost, there's what Kev just said. It's completely baffling to me, but then it's not, because money talks. So when you put it in perspective that a country with a serious record of human rights abuses, on top of the desire to create what is effectively and may even end up being a fire festival type event after this, is a glitz and glam, as a novelty project. All in all, there's just so many fallacies you can think about it. I just don't know. I don't even know where to begin outside of that. They shouldn't be hosting this. Now, with that said, am I going to support the team? I'm going to support the team, but I'm not going to support the country or the venue or say that and give a Infantino type speech and defend them for any reason whatsoever.
Yeah, did you hear that as well?
I did. Yeah. Absolutely. Outrageous.
Fucking mental.
What would you expect? What do you expect? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's Ray, you and I have talked off pod about this before, and it sucks that, one, it's in Qatar, given the human rights record, given what it took to make these stadiums, given the size of the country, given everything. Like, from the American perspective, this country is the size of Connecticut. I grew up in Connecticut. It takes you 2 hours to drive from end of the state to end of the state. I can't imagine there being a World Cup-sized event happening in the state of Connecticut. It's just ridiculous. You go into the fact that they had to move it from the summer, when there are no sports except baseball, to Thanksgiving week, essentially, and up, lead up to Christmas, where there are so many sports that you're overwhelmed, so you're not going to necessarily have the fanatic energy to watch every game. And then it was bad enough, and Infantino gets in front of a microphone and essentially goes, you know, a lot of people, like, he whataboutismed atrocities. And it's just, my God, man, how could you be more tone deaf? Like, and the thing that really blows my mind about it is it was Sepp Blatter. So Infantino could just put everything on Sepp and really put the blame somewhere else and make himself look, I mean, you can't look great. You're running FIFA no matter what, but you can make yourself look better. You can really polish that turd. And he's like, instead of polishing the turd, what if I just take a dump on top of the dump? And what if that helps?
And throw it all in your fucking faces.
Yeah, if I make it smell so bad, you think people will stop talking about it, or will they talk about it more? It's the most tone-deaf tournament that's ever been put into place. And Tim, I'm obviously going to watch. I'm obviously going to cheer for the U.S. I'm obviously going to get excited. I'm not going to feel clean about it at any point, though.
No, exactly. I think that's how I feel about it in general. And the whole Infantino speech is not. Yeah, it's just it's bad. It's bad, and everything that's happened in the build up to this, it just seems to be getting worse as well. And I know on Friday they announced that the alcohol will be banned from the stadiums as well. Not the, you know, the massive point, but it's just a very late decision on that. And it's, again, more things that are happening at this World Cup that are making me think, oh, should I really be watching this right now? Are we going to see any bootlegging, do you think?
No, or if they do, that we're not going to hear about it, because the last thing that Qatar is going to want to do is talk about that. They're just going to – they would just automatically deport anybody and not make a big deal about it. They've already made a big deal and an issue about all these things. And to me, it's like the old Simpsons episode where, well, Mr. Burns went to the doctor's office and they're trying to realize all the diseases that he has going through the door, and that none of them can fit together, so they're all in perfect harmony. It's basically this type of situation with all the issues with Qatar going through. Nothing can get through, and nothing sticks out more than one right now.
Yeah, but I mean, to answer your question directly, Ray, do I expect Americans and English and Welsh fans to not try to bring alcohol into a stadium. Yeah, I'm expecting that to happen. And I'm Brittany Griner still is in jail for like 9 years in Russia. Yeah. I think we could be getting something of a similar level if some kind of YouTuber or something gets put behind bars. I think it's totally possible. You kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And even before it was banned, I mean, I saw the prices they were charging for a 500ml bottle of Budweiser, £11.50. And that's just shy of $14. What the hell?
Well, I mean, now,
that's surprising.
Yeah.
That's the least surprising thing out of all this.
Yeah, I don't know the last time you've been to Madison Square Garden, but buddy, I got bad news about the beer you could get there.
Yeah, but you wouldn't get a 500ml bottle, would you, at Madison Square Garden? And $14, well, Jesus.
Advantage you guys for making sure everything's in the metric system, though, because dumb Americans come over being like, it sounds like a lot. I don't know.
How much, just incidentally, how much is a beer at MSG these days?
I do believe a tall boy is, I believe, going to run you $16.50.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I'll be smuggling alcohol in there then. Little hip flask. Brilliant. But we don't condone this. If any listeners are out there are saying, oh, that's not a bad idea, and are trying that for Qatar, then yeah, I'm not going to be that responsible.
No, please, God, don't do it in Qatar. I don't want to read about you getting arrested or anything like that. Or better yet, I don't want to read about you, quote unquote, disappearing. Getting arrested would be a step in the right direction, but there's like, it's really dark to say there's a chance that you could just be never heard from again. But there, you could just be never heard from again. You could just be erased from the world.
Yeah.
Well, you did say you didn't want to hear from that, so that's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Back into the World Cup then. I remember back in 1994, the US hosted the tournament. Kevin, me and you were 9, just going on 10. And I remember the opening ceremony well enough, and despite England not qualifying for it. And I remember seeing a reporter smooching around Pasadena and asking the average Joe who's going to win the World Cup. And not one of those US fans knew it was even happening. But now, I mean, come on, the growth of the game since then has been massive. You know, the MLS continues to grow. I still think it needs to be made more available in the UK because I never get to see it over here. I'm sure it is, but that's probably my fault. I don't look for it. And of course, the next World Cup in 2026 will be held in Canada, US and Mexico. So that's only going to help the game grow even more. But yeah, guys, Tim and Greg, do you remember that World Cup? Or are you too young for that?
I was 6 years old, and the original first game was in Soldier Field. So I have a deck of cards that is with the World Cup 94 logo on it. But beyond that, all I know is that because I was living here in Chicago at the time, that it was going, I heard about it and that was going on and that was it.
I think football in the mid 90s wasn't really that popular, especially in Chicago, because they had that team Chicago Bulls. I don't know if you've heard of them. They were pretty good in the mid 90s. So.
They were. I really did not know that. You know, it's not like my entire closet is full of things that is related to the Chicago Bulls and have childhood memories with it and seen going around. It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
I had a different 94 experience from Tim. I was five, so around the same age, but
the hockey in 1994 was pretty good.
Not just the hockey. So there's a phenomenal ESPN 30 for 30 that I don't know if they have it in England. It's called June 17th, 1994, and it walks people through the day.
Amazing, amazing
it's
video.
It's my favorite 30 for 30. It's just live footage of all the sporting events that happened that day. And on that day, the 1994 World Cup started. The New York Rangers hosted the parade. The Knicks and Rockets were playing game 5, I believe, at Madison Square Garden, the NBA Finals. It was Arnold Palmer's final round of the U.S. Open. Ken Griffey Jr. set a major league record for most home runs in the first half of the season. Oh, and a guy named O.J. Simpson took L.A. police on a chase on the L.A. freeway that dominated the airways throughout all of it. It's ridiculous to think that all these things happened on the exact same day in 1994. But from a kid growing up in New York perspective, I will be completely honest with you and had no idea the World Cup even happened in 1994. The Rangers won the Cup, the Knicks, a historic loss in an NBA Finals, and baseball went on strike. And that's about all kids in Connecticut cared about. For me, I knew the World Cup kind of existed in 1998, but I don't think soccer, the momentum that it needed, I really don't think it took hold until the women won in 99 and they became a complete phenomenon. I don't know anyone that wasn't watching the Women's World Cup in 99, Mia Hamm, Judy Foudy, Brandi Chastain scoring the game winner, taking the shirt off. That's maybe one of the five most iconic sports photos in American sports history. So for me, and you also have to take into consideration, not only do the women win in 99, but then the men advanced to the round of 16 in 2002. So you all of a sudden have this U.S. momentum that has people understanding this event, caring about this event, more importantly, rooting for successful teams in this event. And then I to this day, I still think what has taken soccer to the next level is the Premier League, the rights being easily accessible on American television every weekend. Since 2010, when NBC got that contract, it is a night and day difference from people who understood soccer, played FIFA, played the video games, enjoyed the World Cup every 4 years, to like there are football conversations that happen on a weekly basis now because of NBC and their coverage of the Premier League. I don't think it would have happened without that massive factor being involved. But yeah, 94, had no idea it was here. Didn't know it existed. A lot of things were going on in America at the time. For me, 99 is the line in the sand where the women winning, that team becoming a phenomenon, everything changing in terms of how I ingested soccer. Yeah, it started in 1999.
The Title IX was the focus of within collegiate athletics to have equal representation for both money or population or type of enrollment within athletics, where it was such a huge disparity. And because of that, it's been 25 years now when it was first enacted in 1997, and how it's built up to where we're at today. Women's sports are just as predominant in terms of when it comes to the participation in today's society, which is lovely, and which is great. Now, in terms of popularity, that's a different item, because obviously all the major sports leagues, but women today's day and age it's a whole lot better than it was, and it definitely was spurred because of the Women's World Cup in 1999.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that England get that same kick, because women's football over here is getting bigger, and obviously winning the Euros in the summer has helped massively to inspire the younger generation to even participate, which is fantastic.
Back to 1994, I think that must have been the first football match I ever watched, or at least it's the first football match I remember watching.
What, the final, Brazil.
The final, yeah, Brazil.
Yep. Roberto Baggio missing the penalty.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. Anyway, the match, England versus USA then. So it's on Friday, the 25th of November, or if you're American, it's on November the 25th. Local time is at 10 p.m., 7 p.m. in the UK. Kevin, I believe it's 10 o'clock in the evening for you. Is that right?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And 2 p.m. for you guys. And you're both on Eastern time, aren't you?
I am on Central time now. Now they live in Chicago.
Yeah.
It is a perfectly timed match in the U.S., and it's not by coincidence, by the way, that the U.S. very conveniently is not playing on Thanksgiving, a day dedicated to American football, and will instead get the Black Friday treatment, a day dedicated to heavy drinking, shopping, and other sports of any other.
It is literally the perfect day for the biggest. Just the hoopla and all the other sports going on, this should be the biggest and most watched soccer match in the history of the U.S.
That's good. And the venue, it's in the Al Bayt Arena in the city of Al-Kir. Forgive me, my Arabic isn't up to scratch. It has 63,000 capacity and will host the opening match later this evening. It's the second biggest stadium in the competition as well, and it has a retractable roof. There you go. Interesting. Tim, I'll go to you first. How are you feeling about this fixture? Are you nervous or are you pumped for it?
Well, the way that I look at the group is, so you've heard of the term group of death in the past, and there is no true group of death in the World Cup this year. But in terms of if you did golf scoring and you added up all of the teams in all of the groups and to see who has the lowest ranking, the lowest total number, that would be our group. And what that means is the bottom three of the group, meaning there's England and then the rest of us chums, We are fairly equal, right around the same ranking. Now, FIFA rankings could be debatable, but I can't consider it with some ebbs and flows. And so, to me, right now, we need to play Wales first, which is tomorrow, and you guys need to play Iran tomorrow, which is obviously first. And so I really hope we're not looking ahead to the match. I really want to be able to go in and develop and get that, because if we're able to beat Wales, it's going to give us so much confidence, because England is in a downturn right now.
Easy.
And it can give us the opportunity, and if we can build that momentum right now, outside of maybe Miles Robinson, who tore his Achilles, we're looking at approximately 9 or 10 of the starters that we were thinking about 6 months ago. So to me, I will have a whole lot more confidence if we do well and play well against Wales and if we can beat them.
Greg, are you scared?
Honestly, no. Similar to what Tim is talking about, I haven't even taken into consideration how England has played lately. I haven't taken into consideration who could possibly be in the U.S. lineup. To me, the entire future and ability of the U.S. in this World Cup comes down to that Wales game. If they get a win against Wales, everything's going to feel peachy keen. Everything's going to feel like house money. Whatever happens against England happens. It starts feeling a lot like the Germany game from 2014, where, sure, you'd like the U.S. to have a nice showing, but realistically, doesn't quite matter. If the U.S. get a point against Wales, I'm going to be much more nervous and feel like the U.S. has to park the bus a little bit, just make sure Harry Kane doesn't score any goals. And then if the U.S. lose to Wales, I'm going to be doom and gloom. It's going to be straight misery, and it's going to feel like the United States don't have a path to advance out of the group. So it's honestly hard to look towards the England matchup at all, because it feels like the fate of the United States is going to be determined in their first game against Wales. It's the most important game on the calendar. It will determine the importance of the remaining two games. And yeah, worst case scenario for me is the U.S. lose and England lose to Iran, and then both teams come into that Friday game feeling like they absolutely positively need 3 points, and it will be in just a bloodbath that the United States is not equipped to win a bloodbath at this point in time. So let me get through Monday. Let me beat Wales. Let me remind Gareth Bale that winning the MLS Cup doesn't mean shit in the international football stage. And then talk to me about England, because right now I honestly don't know where my emotions are going to be, because I just give me the 3 points tomorrow and I'm a happy man.
Yeah. And Kev, that it's funny that Greg should say that, because if England do actually, you know, lose to Iran, which is not an impossibility, right? I mean, if we believed what Iran are going to do is they're going to park the bus straight away. They often do that. And then they can catch us on the counter and win 1-0 or something. Then that US game becomes incredibly nervous for both nations. But yeah, how are you feeling about it, Cam?
I don't know. I think much. We should win that Iran fixture. And if we don't, then yeah, USA is going to be a big problem, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we don't want to come to that, do we?
No, I think it has to be. A safe win against Iran, and then whatever happens in that US game, I don't think really matters too much. Yeah, I don't know. It's difficult to say which is the more difficult fixture, States or Wales.
Wow, I just think because Wales are going to be up for the England game a lot more than they are for any other game in this group. Would you agree? Just know the amount of passion and even the fans will bring for it, just like a home nation's tie. It's just got that little bit more. I don't know. I guess it would be kind of the similar thing if the US were playing Mexico or Canada. It just has that little bit more bite or oomph to it. But luckily, we should hopefully, fingers crossed, be qualified before we play Wales. So that won't be an issue. We just need to pick up 3 points against Iran and then a point against America. It won't be a bad thing, will it?
No.
And Greg, I was on your show earlier in the week and we previewed the groups and I mentioned that all four of these sides are in the top 20 of the official FIFA rankings, which is something that Tim just touched on. Iran are ranked 20th, Wales are 19th, USA are 16th and England are 5th. So that's 1-0 to England. US women, though, they're of course, they're ranked number one and the English, but the English are fast approaching. So let's call that 1-1. And also I mentioned, or I don't know if I did actually, but England have been at war with every single team in this group. So, yeah, Kevin, I'm sure you're well up on your Anglo-Persian war.
Yeah, I remember it well.
And Greg, if we're to go by the odds, the final standings on this group will be England, Wales, USA, Iran. Is that correct?
Now, in the US now has the edge over Wales in terms of
interesting
advancing out of the group. But it's incredibly small. I believe the US odds are now minus 110 and Wales is minus 105. So it might as well be a toss-up. But slight money has shifted here in the United States where the U.S. is slightly favored to come out of the group. And it, I don't know. I mean, I'm curious Tim's opinion too, because it feels like over the last couple weeks, the narrative has shifted from this U.S. team can do something special, this rotation to, well, all they really need to do is get some experience because 2026 is when they're going to explode. And I got, it feels a little defeatist from where I sit. It feels like the U.S. is already coming up with excuses for why they're not going to advance past the group stage. And I don't like it. I hate that mentality. It's like a fan base being like, well, I'm just happy to have made the playoffs. Yeah, I'm here. Don't waste my time. I'd like to win now.
I think, though, it's a free hit in a way, though, isn't it? Because they're underdogs and they're not expecting it. And if they go and do it, then wow, yeah, you know, what does that do for the country?
At the same time, yes, but at the same time, like, can a country be taken seriously on the world stage if they can't advance past Wales? Like, I'm not saying Wales is bad or anything like that, but the United States have these pie-in-the-sky dreams. It's an incredibly young roster. Talent is oozing out of every part of it. Players are now playing in Europe in high leverage roles. That's all great. But like, if this team can't beat late end of career Gareth Bale and his ragtag bunch of nobodies, yeah, I'm going to be upset. That's not going to be a moral victory for me.
No, I get it. I do get that. But yeah, I kind of sense it that it is. It's such a young side. I think it's the second youngest team in the World Cup. I do also think that it is shaping up for that 2026 one, because a lot of them are still going to be there if they're good enough still, of course. And I think that's the one that we need to watch out for. I think they could really make a dent in that tournament. Well, me and you, Greg, had both said that it's going to be England and the USA that are going to come through this group. Tim and Kevin, any movement on that from you?
I think the outcome of the US-Wales game is probably going to decide it. But I'd probably agree with that.
Oh, Tim?
It's right now, I give it a 40% chance that the U.S. advance, the 40% chance the Wales advance, and 20% chance Iran advances. So to me, I feel 40% confident that they can advance in the group.
Does that mean that England's 100% to advance?
Yes, I believe that they will be either first or second out of the group. Now, if this is going to be like 2010 and Pickford's going to give a holler like Rob Green.
Had
to make sure that gets thrown in here. But where we end up scoring and beat Algeria in the last minute to become first in the group, I will gladly take it. But I think England's going to, whether they're going to limp through or be dominant through, they're going to advance into the next round. So, yes, I will
God
give
bless
a.
You, Tim. Thank yep. you.
Tim, are you suggesting that Iran is going to take this group hostage?
That truly sounds like a Contra affair.
It would be revolutionary if that happens.
Moving on. Historically, we've met 11 times in total, USA and England. Greg and Tim, without cheating, how many times have the USA won?
It can't be more than two. It just can.
You're going with two. Tim,
I'll go with
you?
Three.
Right. It's two. It's two. Well done. USA won the first ever meeting back in 1950 in that World Cup. And the US Cup back in 1993, which I don't remember. I don't know what it is. I just made that up, I'm sure.
Oh, was that the Confederations Cup, I suppose?
Yeah, it must have been, just to make it sound like it wasn't a friendly. But England have won 8 of those. I'm not going to read out all the English victories because we have too many. But I will read out the margins of victory. We've had a 6-3, an 8-1, a 10-0, a 5-0, And most recent we faced was November 2015 and a comprehensive 3-0. Jesse Lingard, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Callum Wilson, if you're wondering. That was at Wembley.
Trent played in that game?
And he scored, yeah. I have no recollection of this, but this was November 2015.
In 2015? What was he, 12 in that game?
Yeah, I don't remember this.
He was wearing diapers.
Yeah, I don't remember this, but he still did it anyway. One thing to mention, though, all of our 8 victories have been in friendlies. Never a competitive match. My mind is blown. I did not know that. And
yeah,
of course,
I got news for you. You forgot the 2 biggest victories on there. Something happened in 1776 and 1812.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're going back to that now, aren't we?
Well, I mean, if we're talking historically, it's just further evidence that England doesn't show up unless it's a friendly.
Yeah, it's true. And, of course, that one draw in the 2010 World Cup, which Tim reminded us of. Thanks for that. Guys, I want to talk about your manager, Greg Berhalter. Greg, I understand you're not too keen on him.
I'm not. I really, really wish it was. I'm not asking for Bruce Arena. I'm happy we've moved on from that part of our life, but I could not possibly be more out on Berhalter. He just I don't respect international managers that don't have the balls to justify the decisions they make within the squad. Tim earlier mentioned Jedi Robinson being one of the Robinsons being out for this World Cup, and it leaves a gaping, ginormous black hole next to Walker Zimmerman on the United States back line.
He's played like terrible the last year or so.
Yeah,
he's played like trash.
Now it's fair to point out that it took John Brooks a while to find a new team this year, and it's fair to point out that John Brooks has not been involved very much in the Benfica side this year. But if you go all the way back to a couple of years ago, Greg Berhalter has dropped John Brooks from the U.S. national team without explanation and without merit. And this is a guy who has scored on the World Cup stage, has played against big teams on the World Cup stage. He was a fixture, and his entire international career is thanks to how he played in the 2014 World Cup. And it's baffling to me that when you have a center back opening on your team that you don't take him. And it'd be one thing if that was the only decision, but there is one position in the U.S. since Clint Dempsey's retirement that has just gone vacant forever, and that's a central striker. The United States don't have one that really knocks the doors off you, and he's tried a lot of things to his credit, but it feels like he tries a lot of MLS options first. Jordan Pefok is near the top of the Bundesliga Golden Boot race. He is scoring goals against some of the best competition in the world, and at no point except one, I think, Gold Cup match against, like, the Grenadines has Jordan Pefok featured in a Greg Berhalter side. It doesn't make any sense. And then, Ray, you know this from you and I talking other sports, but nothing in my life frustrates me more than a coach who feels the need to imprint a system on a team as opposed to building a system given the pieces that he's given. And Berhalter is desperately trying to fit these square pegs into round holes every fucking time. And my only hope of the U.S. not advancing out of this group stage is they will finally can his ass and get someone in here. The question is, who would I prefer? I don't know at
Klinsmann.
This point. Klinsmann was at least entertaining, though. Like, it was chaotic. Anyways. It was chaotic, but it was like chaos is at least fun. Berhalter is boring and bad. Those are the two worst things you can be.
So you don't have a natural number 9, then? That's what you're saying. What about Gio Reyna? Where does he play? Does he play off the front?
He plays
off the front.
The best attacking options the U.S. have kind of come from the wings, where guys
and also Reyna's born in Sunderland, so he's not even American.
Listen, if your father is Claudio, you are American. Those are the rules.
So currently, right now, what we have in terms of our striker options are truly individuals who aren't playing as a typical number 9, not the Harry Kane, not the Callum Wilson. So when he's mentioning Jordan Pefok, the only person that would probably or potentially fit that mold is Josh Sargent. But
I like Josh Sargent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And but even so, though, none of our front players, like you might see Timothy Weah, you might see Christian Pulisic play up top. You might see Jesus Ferreira, who's an MLS product, while he dominates in MLS, I don't see him dominating very much on the international stage. We don't have that number nine right now that is definitive. And we cannot tell you, nobody can tell you who is going to be in that starting front three outside of Pulisic and where he'll be on the line. So to me, it's a little hesitant to us and seeing what's going to go on. And that is our center back option. Miles Robinson and Walker Zimmerman were pretty much an amazing pair and worked together fantastically. So seeing Miles Robinson out and then John Brooks, at least I can find and justify why he was dropped and not brought in because he couldn't find a team. But in the international stage, he's only flourished with us. And so it's one of those players like, why did you not bring him? But to his fact, though, he brought in Tim Ream, who is 35, but he's that left-sided center back that could be a complement to Walker Zimmerman, where people were screaming for him because he's really genuinely played well alongside Anthony Robinson, who's they're both play for Fulham now and are starters there. So we couldn't really tell you who's going to be. It's going to be Walker Zimmerman and somebody else. And I'm thinking it's going to be, I generally think it is going to be Tim Ream. And then you've got Serginho Dest and you've got Anthony Robinson and you've got Matt Turner. So there are some insecurities that we have within our team. And there's a few players that I'm, it's a matter of how we're going to mix up. I'd say there's probably 16 players that can potentially start out of 11.
Yeah, Tim, doesn't it feels really Southampton-y, doesn't it? Where you are super confident on the wings and in the midfield, but you have no fucking idea who's going to score a goal, and you're 50-50 on who's going to prevent the goal from going in.
Yeah. Well, the thing, though, is if we had Che Adams starting for us, though, I would feel 10 times more confident because he would get up there and he'd have the hold-up play, where then the wings, whomever it would be, if it's Aronson or Reyna or Pulisic, he'd be able to drop off and run, and they'd be able to make the runoffs. And then with Yunus Musa and Tyler Adams, well, Yunus Musa and Weston McKennie, I think if we had Adams, that would be a massive compliment to the team. Oh man, if we had Adams and Salisu, we should be favorites in the group as well. I'm genuinely serious about that.
Okay, that's interesting. Kevin, a word on Gareth Southgate. Well, he's led the team to a World Cup semi-final and then to a Euro final. Should he be getting more respect, or should we be saying that, you know, he's missed the best chance that we've had with these bunch of players?
As far as you could make a case for either. I feel that, you know, just like any England manager, Gareth Southgate's just one poor tournament performance short of losing his job. But yeah. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective,
a bit like Man United, in that sense.
I don't remember United getting to a final in the last 5 years, you've got us to the final of Euros and the semi to the World Cup, so yeah, that's
I don't know, Ken. I always felt
the draw was quite fruitful for us,
but I always felt with Southgate that he was kind of like a stopgap. It was after Allardyce, wasn't it, when he came in for a game and then and went. I always thought that Gareth Southgate would take over on a caretaker basis and then we'd get somebody who was really, really worthy of the job, and he's still here. Now, I do think, no matter how far we go in this World Cup, I do think this is his last tournament with us.
You think so?
I do think so, yeah. I don't think he's getting another contract out of this. I think the amount of players that we've got, the amount of attacking players that we've got and the options... I don't know. I do think the thing is with England, they've got all the players that we could possibly want right now, apart from defensively. But I just feel like there's always somebody that comes along that's just that little bit better than us. And this World Cup is no exception. So, and we always play those teams like quite early on. And fortunately, in the last World Cup, we were lucky that we got through against the teams that we did. And even in the Euros, you could say, when we found that team that was just a little bit too good for us, they beat us. Okay, Italy and penalties. It was a 50-50, but that was
frustrating. That was the most frustrating thing because we dispatched Germany, which is where we normally slip up, didn't we?
And then, exactly.
yeah, Ukraine and Denmark didn't, that wasn't particularly difficult. And you think that if you'd have, hadn't have parked the bus, if you'd have gone all out and risked a bit more, then that final would have easily been ours. But
yeah, that's kind of, has to go on Southgate, doesn't it? Because yes, I mean, they did go out for it. Luke Shaw scored straight away, didn't he? And we thought, this is it. But then they did sit back and they did a Saints and conceded. And, you know.
Can I ask you guys an ignorant American question about England right now?
Yeah.
How seriously should we take England's just god-awful performance in the Nations League? Is it just glorified friendlies that no one's trying to get hurt in, or is this a sign of things to come?
I do think that he was experimenting a little bit with the team in that Nations League. And whenever we break up from the world, from the Premier League to play these Nations League games, I feel like nobody wants it, including the players. The season just starts and then you break away and you play these meaningless Nations League games. And the first season of the Nations League, we got to the final and they put everything into it. I just don't think they did. And it was terrible. And I think that is what isn't helping England's chances in this World Cup. People are going to look at those games and think, oh, my God, they got battered by Hungary. Yeah. But in fact, he was changing the system up a bit. You know, he experiments with the back three or the back five and a 4-4-2, or 4-3-3 rather. I don't want to pay attention to those. I think you can look at the qualifying. That's the real England. Even though we were playing against lesser opposition, and I think we won 10-0 in our qualifying, and that was San Marino though. But those are the games that really, really make it. And I always feel that England always have performed better in tournaments, much like Germany in that sense, because you know they're not very hot at the moment either. But as soon as they get into in tournament football, that's when they start, you know, to really, really press it.
Historically, we'd always boss qualification and then squeeze ourselves out of the group stage and get beaten by Germany. That's the formula, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Or lose on penalties. Yeah, that is exactly what I've had to experience my entire life. But now we seem to be getting a grip on qualifying and punching above our weight in the tournament. And I do think we've been punching above our weight. Certainly, you know, how far we've got, not necessarily the opposition that we've been playing. Tim, a little bit of a word on your CONCACAF, your qualifying. So you played 14, you won 8, lost 2, and drew 4. I mean, is that record fair? I mean, did you think you played well enough to be here, or was it just a bit of, you know, spot of luck that you managed to get through?
No, I think we actually played like the third best team in CONCACAF, and so based on the qualifying setup, I think we should be here. I think there's enough talent, obviously, throughout the play, and we did enough to beat up on the minnows. And when you think of traditional CONCACAF play, you think of the U.S. and Mexico, and then everybody else. Recently, Costa Rica had that good. I believe it was 2014 that they were able to advance, and other teams have made it through, potentially like Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago and Honduras in one-offs here in the last. 3 to 4 World Cups. But for us, Canada did absolutely fantastic, and they came onto the national fray, the international fray, coming through and being led by Davis, and then just having a collective team play. Their manager has been fantastic for them, and all in all, it was a scrape to get through, and they finished at 25 points, equal to Costa Rica, who was fourth. And so going throughout the session, we were pretty much secure since we beat Panama. And we, if you did not see this at all, in the second to last game,
yeah, 5-1.
We beat Panama but we played them in Minneapolis in February, and it was sub-zero temperatures.
I think you said that on the show, actually, didn't you?
Yes, and it was completely crazy to think about what they were doing. They basically had to make it, but I mean, it was a dumb decision. I think it's a dumb decision, not just for the fact, because when you create conditions like that, it creates equal play. But it worked out because Panama, shook in their boots, and they couldn't shake it off. And Matt Turner literally just doing running sprints between the 6 and the 18 yard box, trying to stay warm during the game. So nonetheless, I mean, they definitely they lost to Canada away. They lost to Mexico. Let's take a look here. They tied Mexico away in Azteca. So that's always a plus.
True with Jamaica as well.
Yeah, and that's just – and sometimes, I mean, what you're ultimately looking for in qualification is you win at home and you try to draw away and get a result away. That's how you get through and you qualify. Because looking at that, if you've ever watched a game between El Salvador or Honduras against any of them, it's literally just kicking and screaming and punching, and it's just – it's an ugly, ugly, ugly game, and it's called getting CONCACAF'd. And if you go down to the rainforest in Central America and you're playing El Salvador and it's a hot evening and or wherever it might be, or you're playing Azteca, which is 7,000 feet, it's really tough.
It can be, yeah. That's something that we don't actually have to deal with, isn't it, Kev? We just got the same. It's not really, different climates that you have to play for it. But your qualifying start is bad as well. Like the 0-0 draw in El Salvador to start things off. And then the 1-1 draw against Canada, it was like, oh my God, this is going to be a struggle.
Absolutely. So then in the beginning, we were a little concerned there, but we picked it up. We didn't recognize that Canada was going to be so good. And looking back on it as a backward perspective, Canada playing so well, they were fantastic, and they absolutely deserve to be here as well. So congrats to them, and I'm going to root for them. I'm genuinely going to root for Canada.
So am I.
I want to see them be well and succeed. And if you didn't follow Costa Rica, they won like their last five games in a row to be able to get to fourth place, and then they had to beat New Zealand on the International Confederation Playoff, which was crazy to think about. So all in all, happy. They deserve to be here, and for the three automatic qualifying spots, and getting excited. So I mean, I'm a little tentative overall, and the Wales game is really scary to me, even though it's tomorrow, and I'm lots to think about.
Yeah, and Greg, like just a little bit more on the qualifying. Pulisic top scored with 5, and you got 6 clean sheets in that, and 4 of them were Matt Turner, 2 of them were Zach Steffen, who's not even going to the World Cup, which that surprised me a little bit. You scored 22 goals in qualification, and you let in 9. That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So what Tim's point is, I never really felt like the U.S. were in doubt of qualifying. What frustrated me mostly was that Mexico really looked not just vulnerable, just flat out bad at times through the qualification round.
Took 4 points from them.
Yeah, which is good. But it's like the thing that frustrates me about the U.S. finishing third, it has nothing. Canada being as good as they were completely, you and I have talked about it before. We're big Canada guys. We actually I have a little action on Canada coming out of that group and all
I
that.
I do too. I think Canada will come through.
But it's really that the U.S., they seized the individual opportunity on Mexico, but they just kind of let Mexico hang around. It should have been Mexico sweating out whether they were going to qualify or not. It's not like the U.S. sweated it out per se, but the U.S. were in more peril than Mexico was. And there's just so much more turmoil in the Mexican Federation right now than there is in the U.S. that it is disappointing to look back at the qualifying and be like, how do we finish behind them? This time, really, we took 4 from them. We got the Azteca point, which is essentially a win. And it's just like the U.S., they always let these games that they should win trip them up, where they don't think about it or don't take it seriously, or like – it's just at a weird time, and it's in a weird country, and all of it. To Tim's point, CONCACAF is just a fucking mess.
Who won that group, by the way? Was it Canada?
I believe it was Canada, yeah.
Canada won with 28 points. Mexico is finished on, let's take a look here.
And they, USA third.
Mexico finished on 28 as well, but less on goal difference to Canada. And then U.S. finished at 25 with plus 11, and Costa Rica at 25 with plus 5.
So ultimately, Greg, you're saying that I'm guessing because they couldn't take their chances against a weakened Mexico side that it kind of affected their seeding going into the World Cup qualification or the World Cup groups.
I mean, maybe I just it's frustrating to me that it felt like there's still this level of entitlement with the U.S. men's national team that just doesn't quite feel earned. That bothers me in the qualification process where, yeah, if they play at 70%, they're going to advance. They are simply better and more talented than a lot of other teams in CONCACAF. But if this team really wants to take their game to the next level and be taken seriously on a national stage, sometimes you have to put boots to throat. And it doesn't feel like, unless it's Mexico, the United States is just like, yeah, whatever, it's CONCACAF, we'll be fine. It's like, yeah, this isn't what you should be doing to build international confidence and prepare for big tournaments. And so finishing third like the U.S. did, I'm happy, but it's also one of those things where it's like, guys really should have done better here. Come on now. Mm.
Yeah, I get that. Kevin, UEFA qualification, Group I, Albania, Andorra, Hungary, Poland, San Marino, breezed through, played 8, 1-10, drawn 2. Those two draws were Poland away and Hungary at home. So no losses, Kev. Easy qualification, no problem. We had that 10-0 against San Marino as well, which was nice. Kane got 4 goals on that night. You expect to qualify top of that group, and you know, no problems whatsoever. Okay, you could maybe think that away to Poland could be a bit of a struggle, and that's the one that we had the 1-1 draw with. But overall, Harry Kane, 12 goals. Just out of curiosity, do you know who was second most goals during England's qualification? This is open to anyone, by the way.
Sterling.
You're going Sterling. What about you guys?
I'll say Mason Mount.
Oh, and Tim?
Let's go with Saka.
Okay, no, it was Harry Maguire. With 4 goals in qualification. So yeah, we had 7 clean sheets. We scored 39 goals and we conceded just 3. So that's impressive, right? That's the England that we want to see. It doesn't matter who we were playing. That's the England that we want to see in this World Cup.
Yes. Yeah, that would be amazing. If we can go through the whole tournament and just concede 3 goals.
It's most likely going to be 3 goals against Wales, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't judge England at all based on the qualification because, yeah, we always seem to top the group. But yeah, hopefully Harry Kane's on form and he can score goals from open play.
Yeah, and more. And don't forget, he's the defending Golden Boot winner.
Yeah.
More goals, please. But Kev, the things that Greg brought up as well, and the thing that a lot of England fans are worried about is that Nations League following qualification, because it was dreadful. 6 games, 3 losses and 3 draws. That last being that 3-3 draw at Wembley when Armel Balakotchak made his debut for Germany, of course. But those Nations League losses, was it Hungary, a 1-0 loss and then a 4-0 loss. I can't quite understand. I guess to Greg's point is that Southgate was experimenting with that squad and using it more as a friendly. So Hungary were in our World Cup qualifying group and we had no trouble with them. So, again, it's just...
Apart from racism.
Well, yeah, apart from that racism. But the draws, I mean, we drew away at home and away to Germany and at home to Italy. We always draw with Italy. So I think the bad form from that Nations League is the reason why Southgate is getting criticised so much and why we're not maybe as high on England's hopes as perhaps we should be.
I don't know. It could work either way for us. It could be a sign of what's to come. But, I mean, you'd hope that after all that experimenting that he's worked out what his best squad is.
Greg and Tim, the US, how they're shaping up lately. They've had a lot of injuries, though. And I've heard through differing media sources that the problem with the US is that the best, I don't know if this is Berhalter or it's just generally your players, that your best players don't play well enough together. And you lost to Japan and a 0-0 draw with Saudi Arabia most recently. But, you know, the injuries that you've had, I mean, who's missing out of here? You've got Chris Richards, by the way, who's not going. You haven't really mentioned him. And Miles Robinson, both key centre-backs, as you've said. But is there anybody else that should be here? Because I mentioned to you as well then, Greg, Zach Steffen, he's had 2 clean sheets in qualification. He's not in the squad.
Yeah, Greg Berhalter, for whatever reason, has never picked a clear number one goalie. And I think the mental gymnastics have truly messed with all of the goalies. But it seems like Steffen is the one who really, between the ears, took it the hardest. And is just, it's shocking that he's not here, but... Honestly, if this means it's Matt Turner's show and Matt Turner's going to run it and we finally have a clear number one and we're not going to have to play this guessing game as who's in goal, is it Ethan Horvath this time? If they can finally just have a goalie play him all the time and just run with it, I think it'll be better for the team.
It's just like Forster and McCarthy again, isn't it?
It kind of is. And it's so frustrating. It's quite frankly, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have a quarterback. And the United States, they have goalies. They just, for some reason, are like, well, we can just keep playing ones that fit. It's like, it's not really how sports work. It's not how confidence works. You need to build confidence and consistency from a game-to-game basis. Chris Richards is injured. That one hurts because of the Miles Robinson injury. But to, like Tim brought up Tim Ream earlier, that was a surprise inclusion. Mostly, it's sickening that it's a surprise inclusion that an older player is playing so well that he had to force his way onto the team because of injury. Like, a lot of U.S. fans were just accepting the fact that Aaron Long was going to be the guy, and it was going to be. And guess what? He still could be. I could be sitting here, and Aaron Long could be in the team sheet tomorrow afternoon, and I will be despondent and upset. From the U.S., it's like there are seven players that for sure are going to play. Pulisic will be in the lineup. Brendan Aaronson will be in the lineup. Tyler Adams will be in the lineup. Yunus Musah will be in the lineup. Weston McKennie will be in the lineup. I'm not even sure Dest will be. He should be. Walker Zimmerman will be in the lineup.
Sounds like Zimmerman's going to have to be in that lineup.
Well, they love Zimmerman, whether he has international respect or not. Zimmerman he's like this new age Michael Bradley for a while there, where Bradley earned it to a certain extent of time, but the team would feel naked if Zimmerman wasn't in it. And then Gio Reyna is the seventh guy who will be in the lineup if healthy. And then those other four spots, it's a lot of guys who should be, but you're not really sure. Like Matt Turner should be in goal. Josh Sargent should be up top, but you're not sure because he just fucking loves Jesus Ferreira for no fucking reason. Serginho Dest should be in the lineup, but you're not sure.
Because Carter DeAndre Vickers Yedlin as well. I forgot about Carter Vickers and Yedlin. Yeah, you've got some players there that I've completely forgot about.
Yeah, it's you know, seven names are going to be in there. You can write them in with pen. And then the other four are just going to drive you insane and possibly piss you off. And it's unlike anything. It's unlike anything I've usually seen in other sports because there are clear and obvious answers. And Berhalter's like, yeah, but what if I'm smarter than you? I'm like, buddy, you're not. First of all, you spell your name like a fucking idiot. Who's got two G's on the end of Greg? As a fellow Greg, I'm fucking offended. Like,
no, yeah, I'm confused by that. Is his name Gregory, that he spells Gregory with two G's?
Or it better fucking not be, because that's just fucking ridiculous. It drives me up a wall, the double. The Men in Blazers, who are a great U.S.-based football podcast, call him Triple G, and it cracks me up every time. Because I'm Googling him now just to make sure his real name isn't Gregory.
Yeah, I want to know.
It is not. It is Greg just... Matthew Berhalter, Greg with two G's at the end of it.
Crazy, crazy stuff. Tim, you got any thoughts on how the U.S. – any more thoughts than how the U.S. are shaping up?
Yeah, so like we said, so I'm going to go back to front here. Matt Turner is going to be your starter. You're going to have Anthony Robinson, who solidified the left back, Serginho Dest, who solidified the right back. Now, so with the center backs, Walker Zimmerman, and I do think it's going to be Ream who's going to start. I think CCV is great. He's been playing really well for Celtic, and they are really happy to have him there. And he's thriving there, which is great. So he's a good third option.
You're not going to go with Aaron Long then?
No, I mean, I don't want Aaron Long. Now, this is a hope. Now, I can see Aaron Long being started, but he just hasn't played very well, and he hasn't created confidence in it to me. So I do think, though, he's going to play the hot hand, and he is going to play Ream, because he wants to have the continuity there, because if Tim Ream is left-footed, and then in Robinson there, so the left side is truly a Fulham lineup. And I think that's going to be their help. You're going to have a central three of McKennie. So six being Adams, eight being McKennie, and then the 10 being Yunus Musah. And then you're up front. Who is it going to be, potentially? I do think it's going to be Pulisic, and it's going to be maybe Weah. I'm going to just go off the limb and say it's going to be Weah. And then you're going to have Aaronson. Reyna is going to be your super sub. I think you're going to have, you're going to have Yedlin as an option as a sub as well, because of his pure pace and speed. He's basically he's Kyle Walker light to me, except he can't play center back. And then you've got other, you know, who are your you know, your heavy hitters. If that's going to be Josh Sargent, I don't think he's your heavy hitter, but he's going to be able to come off the bench. And then rotating through, who do you trust in these types of situations? I don't necessarily trust De La Torre as in that 8 or in that 10, but I do see that, you know, I feel comfortable, but not 100% confident there.
Greg, off the back of this tournament, can you see any USMNT based players based in the US making that big move to Europe? Are there already, but is there anyone young that's playing in the MLS right now that is going to get a move to Europe off the back of this?
The crazy thing is, for the first time in a very long time, this is a centrally European based side where I don't really know, like, Robinson is a guy you'd think would explode, but I think English fans know about him already because he's been pretty impactful at Fulham for a couple of years now. I think maybe we'll start talking more about Yunus Musa on a could-he-come-to-the-Premier-League type level. But outside of that, honestly, as this is going to sound absolutely insane, but I think – if Brandon Aaronson has an absolutely incredible World Cup, which is totally possible, I think the guy that's going to benefit most from it is his younger brother, Paxton, who just moved over to the Bundesliga. But if Brandon Aaronson has this big move, everyone's going to be like, wait, can we get the next Aaronson? And there is another Aaronson who is really good and really young. And I think the player who could see his stock rise the most this World Cup is a guy not even going.
That's great. Look out for him. He could be heading to Europe pretty soon then.
Looking at the MLS players, you've got Miles Robinson, who is tore his Achilles, so he's not there. Walker Zimmerman, who's 27 or 28 right now and is a center back. And is that too old for him to come over to the Premier League? No, I don't think so, but I don't think he's going to make that move. I think his MLS is in starting for Nashville and is the the leading he's their captain. So I don't think they're going to make that move. Sean Johnson, who's a backup MLS keeper, he's not going to he's in his late 30s. Everybody else is already in Europe. That really matters. And the only other person who's probably going to play who's not in Europe, and Yedlin's at Miami right now, but he's already been at Newcastle.
Yeah, he's been, yeah.
Yeah, so is Jesus Ferreira, who's a 9, and he is young. So
I don't know,
like,
Jordan Morris, because he's at Seattle right now. So
No. He's 26, 27. Okay. Christian Roldan, 26, 20, you know, or 24, 25. I don't think he's going to make it. Jesus Ferreira is the most likely option to come over, and now I don't think it'll be the Premier League. I think he is going to go more towards like a Portugal or a low level team in Spain. He wouldn't come over to go to Germany, or he might go over to like the Eredivisie, but he's the only potential option with the MLS, except for Miles Robinson, who's not there, so he can't shine, and that's it. That's really it.
Yeah, it is crazy, Tim, that this is truly the first year where not only the U.S. have all these European players, but you can make argument for other players not included that are currently in Europe. Like, we've mentioned PFOC, obviously, in the Bundesliga. Malik Tillman has been killing it, absolutely killing it.
For Rangers there.
Yeah, so it's like this is the first World Cup cycle where we're like, oh, what players could jump from MLS to Europe? And instead we're like, should we have taken more European-based players? We've never experienced this as US fans.
Austin, you got Austin Trusty. You got Pepe. We didn't even talk about Ricardo Pepi yet, who's he's at Groningen, and he's on loan there from Augsburg. Geez, yeah. So our primary players now are 90% of them are in Europe. So it's great that MLS is able to do it, and we're able to see people who can thrive from the MLS and push over.
That just goes to show that Greg's theory could be correct then. You know, you've already got these good players over. You're going to have to take their siblings. Kevin, on to England and how we're shaping up, really. We've had the injuries, though, haven't we? We've had a lot of injuries beforehand. They've been dropping like flies. Ben Chilwell went down, which was key, because we don't really have any cover for Luke Shaw. Kyle Walker, of course, he's not played since October, and he's probably going to miss that first game against Iran. Calvin Phillips has been off for over 6 weeks, and Reece James, that is a massive loss. I think the only good thing about all our injuries, we've kept Harry Kane healthy, which I was thinking he was going to go down on the last game of the Premier League weekend, but no, he's still there. So, yeah, injuries have been a big factor for us lately.
Yeah, but I know, I think we've got quite a deep squad. I mean, yeah, looking at what we've got, I'm quite satisfied. With or without James Ward-Prowse, it's still a very decent team. Maybe a little bit stretched in midfield. Don't have a huge number of options, do we?
No, and that's why I thought Ward-Prowse could have been there. Jadon Sancho as well missed out, which, you know, he hasn't really been firing at Man United, so you can understand. A lot of people are saying Chris Smalling probably should have been, because he's been playing outstanding for Roma. Apparently he's in the form of his life. Jose Mourinho loves him, apparently. So Chris Smalling would have been a different option, because England just don't have the pace at the back, do they? You're looking at Harry Maguire and John Stones. They've got no pace at all. So it just goes to show how much Kyle Walker is going to be to this squad. Because if we believe that Gareth Southgate is going to play that back three, and you're going to play Kyle Walker as the right side of that back three, he brings the pace. And then you've got the right wing back, of course, you can use... Trippier or Trent if you have to. But I don't want to play Trent as a right back. If Trent's going to be playing in this team, he's going to need to be playing as a wing back and get forward, because he can't defend, whereas Kyle Walker can. But I don't know. I mean, if he misses that Iran opener, Kyle Walker, by the way, then I think England will play a back four. I hope they do, because I'm concerned that he's going to play too defensively with that. With the wing back, so I'm going to say he goes for a 4-3-3, and then when he plays against the US again, it really does depend whether Walker's fit. So my team, assuming that Walker isn't going to be fit for the US game, I'm going to take Pickford in goal, Trippier right back, Shaw left back, Stones and Maguire at centre, and then the three man midfield of Rice, Phillips and Bellingham. I want to give Bellingham a little bit more freedom.
No Benderson
and no Mount, no. And my front three, I'm going to go Kane through the middle and Saka and Foden. And then off the bench, you know, you've still got Grealish, Rashford, Sterling. You've got the attacking options. And then we're going to have like Mount, Henderson. And Madison as well. So what about Kane, you?
Kane, Rashford and Sterling. It's quite a formidable front three.
Yeah, no Grealish.
Yeah, that's a tough choice, isn't it? I don't know who I'd squeeze in out for a Grealish, you know. Always Grealish falling over and Kane scoring a penalty. That's definitely a strategy.
There you go, Greg. There's a bet for you.
I also have over under 5.5. Average number of expletives English fans scream at Harry Maguire whether he's on the pitch or not.
Always gonna get it.
Also, a non US or non England parlay, over under 2.5 punches thrown at Cristiano, over under 1.5 by his own teammates.
Yeah, it's gonna be Bruno. It is gonna be Bruno. He's gonna have him.
So we go Stones and Maguire as a back two. Yep. Walker as a third if he's playing a back three.
If he's playing a back three, yeah, then I would take I still have Trippier. On the right wing back, sure. On the left wing back,
Trent and Shaw as the wing backs. So.
Not Trent, no. I'd have Trippier. I just on form.
I like the idea of Trent getting more forwards. So yeah, if we are playing three at the back, I'd prefer Trent.
It's just that midfield three, isn't it?
We've got a lot of options up front. That's definitely a plus.
Yeah, I like the attacking.
Yeah.
So I've gone for Kane, Saka, and Foden. Now, you could quite easily go Sterling and Grealish instead of Saka and Foden, but I just...
Yeah.
You could, apart from Kane. Kane stays where he is, right? He's not moving anywhere. But it's just whether who you want supporting him. I'm going to go for Saka and Foden just on form. Grealish definitely not on form. Same with Rashford. And Sterling hasn't been great this season, I don't think. But again, Sterling's a great option off the bench.
Yeah, I don't know. So Sterling, when it comes to the big matches, he always seems to perform well.
He does. And he can.
And I love the pace.
Exactly, running at that tired US defence and getting a penalty, I'll take it.
Yes, please.
Yes. A question for you guys then, Greg. I'll start with you because this is going to be fun. If you could assign the US to a Premier League team, who they're more alike, who would it be, and why is it Leeds?
And why is it Fulham?
No. it's not Leeds.
Oh, no, just because
Leeds,
of all the US.
Leeds is the easy one because they have a US manager and two US stars.
Yeah.
Boy, so it has to be a team that I feel like is a bit entitled, underperforming, but actually has potential. I'm gonna say Leicester, where it's a team that feels like they deserve to be in that top six conversation, but they're not really in that top six conversation.
And plus, you fucking hate the manager as well.
Exactly. Yeah. The only thing that could be worse than Greg Berhalter is if Brendan Rodgers comes over and is now U.S. team manager. That I think would put me into an early grave. I do believe that to be true.
Tim.
The easy answer. Well, yes, definitely you can think of and say Leeds, but it's definitely Fulham. There is no question that it is. It's always been Fulham. The thing is we've always been on the cusp of the top 20 teams in the world. So I think that's approximately fair. And with 17, yeah. With 17 teams getting relegated this year, they've been doing really well. But they've had they've also had a history of U.S. players playing for them. Clem Dempsey, Landon Donovan, have had owners now who are American based. So to me, it's Fulham. There's just something about it that just makes me feel. I've always thought the closest team to the U.S. is Fulham. That's an easy answer.
Kevin, same question to you, but for England. Got to be Arsenal at the moment, isn't it?
Just say Tottenham.
Yeah, that's mine. I'm going Tottenham. Just lots of talent. Never good enough when it matters.
Always the bridesmaids.
Yeah, history of bad managers with massive egos. Yeah, just it's Spurs.
That's a good shout. And when was the last time Spurs won anything?
Exactly. 1966. No.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
Greg, you first. Combine five aside. You have to use three Englishmen and two Americans in this.
Kane, easy. I'd probably take Saka as well. And then I need someone at the back. But you guys kind of suck at the back, too.
Yeah, we do.
I'll take Pickford. I can't believe I'm saying that. But, I mean, my other option is the backup goalie for Arsenal. So I'll go Pickford. And then I'm gonna go the Leeds duo of Adams and Aaronson as my two Americans.
Ah, okay. And Tim?
Pickford at the back. That's an easy choice. And then Kyle Walker is my center back slash right back who can be dominant back there. And then last but not least for the for England, I am going to take Harry Kane. Then you've got Weston McKennie and you've got Christian Pulisic.
OK, Kevin, same question, but you have to pick three Americans.
Three Americans. God, why? OK, a Pulisic. And McKennie would get in, and the third.
You know you want Walker Zimmerman. I can feel it in your voice.
I've got Dest, Aaronson, and McKennie, and I've gone Kane and Pickford.
It's a good choice. Good choice.
Yeah, Kane. Okay, because Greg said, second choice Arsenal goalkeeper or Pickford. Pickford, Kane. Yeah, those are the two.
You've gone for Pulisic.
That means I have to have an American defender. Make it Tim Ream, the legacy choice.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's brilliant. Predictions then. I'll go to Greg first, just because I want any specific match predictions in this one. Is there any that are tickling your balls?
If we're talking specifically England, US, if England drops points against Iran, England is going to win by 2+ goals. So the bet would be England -1.5. Not even like go beyond the money line and take England against the spread. If the U.S. wins and England needs points, I would actually go England -2.5 because I think England would stomp the ever-loving crap out of them. If the U.S. needs points and England lets off, I would honestly bet the draw. I think England, it would be a bit of a letdown game where they know that they will have to take points against Wales most likely. They know that game is going to be volatile and more heated because it's Wales versus England. So if the U.S. needs points and England is coming off of the win against Iran, I do like the U.S. draw. And then if both teams win, I'd probably just stay away because I think you'd get two teams that are just trying to not kill each other and prepare for that third game where the U.S. would likely need a point – against Iran to feel good, and England knows they can just beat Wales in advance.
Yeah. I quite like a bet of her saying that half the American defense is going to pick up a yellow card.
Well, I mentioned this before the other boys jumped on. If you want a U.S.-themed bet in a non-England game, the bet is in each of their last 8 first World Cup games, a goal has been scored in the first 10 minutes of a United States game. So if you wanted to bet either the over on first half goals, or if you get really specific, and I think you can make a goal in the first 15 bet, it's a great bet in the United States Wales game.
Greg, score prediction.
3-1 England. I think the U.S. will sneak one in, but I'm thinking of Harry Kane going against Walker Zimmerman, and it doesn't end well for me.
I'm going to take a draw here. So I think it's going to be 1-1, and it's going to be a Pickford Howler, and it's going to be reminiscent. And the English media is going to go crazy, and finally they're going to think, oh, is Pickford the right guy? No, I don't think Pickford's going to power. I think he's going to play fantastically, but I think it will be a 1-1. We'll get like a cheap penalty thanks to
McGuire,
like an Aaronson drive in the box or something like that, and England will get like a beautiful 1-2 connection, and then Raheem Sterling will tap it in. I think it'll be not the prettiest game in the world, but all full of drama. And yeah, that's it. That's my prediction.
Kevin.
Yeah, England's gonna win 2-0.
Okay, I got England winning 2-1.
Harry Kane penalty, you'll see that.
Okay. Specific. Yeah, I'm going 2-1 England. Greg, who's going to win the World Cup?
Oh, God, it's so boring to say it, but it's Brazil. They are the team best built. They have the best path to the final. Benzema going down yesterday makes me feel even more confident about it.
Who'd you go down on?
I don't know. You know what? No. I'm not going to get canceled today. I've decided. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be safe. I know it's really boring to say, oh, the favorite's going to win the World Cup. But honestly, if it's not Brazil or Argentina, I just don't know who it would be. And I just like the Brazilian path a lot more.
Yep, I'm with you. I'm going Brazil. Tim?
Obviously, you lean towards Brazil, but I guess I want to be different. And by different is I think Germany will take it.
Okay, no, that is quite different, I suppose, yeah. Kevin, who's going to win the World Cup?
I mean, Brazil's going to win it, but if I'm going to be different, I'll say France.
Okay. Golden Boot?
I'll say Kevin De Bruyne. I love picking him. I love rooting for him. I do think Belgium's going to be a little feistier than we're giving them credit to being, specifically you, Ray.
Yeah.
So I'll go KDB. I think he does a number on this tournament.
I'm going to go Kylian Mbappe for the simple fact that he's got to play Tunisia and Australia, and I think France are going to go deep. So there's only one person that's going to bang in their goals. He's going to just have he's going to average a goal a game in the group, at least. So, yeah, Mbappe for me. Tim?
Yeah, if because Benzema is out injured now, I would have been hesitant to take him because I think they would have split the goals. But Mbappe is the clear favorite with France. They play Denmark, Tunisia, and Australia. He's going to pop in 4 within the first 3 games, and I don't think anybody's going to be able to take that. I think Harry Kane's going to score probably 3 goals.
3 against America, and then...
Yeah. But if you're considering like long term, I think France is going to hit they're going to hit out in the quarterfinals. So your next best bet is got to be Neymar. I think Messi is going, they're going to say Messi and be like, "Oh, he's going to play more of a deeper line role like he has at PSG, and he will be able to take penalty kicks, but I think he'll have the most assists in the tournament."
I'll say this: if you wanted to go Brazilian, Vinicius Junior is 50-1. Like that's a really juicy bet. If you want the who on Brazil is likely to be the missile towards goal and they're gonna go deep, 50-1 is really good.
That's amazing. How is that?
Ooh, 50 or 15?
5-0. Last I saw.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I think you just have to think: how does popular money bet? They're just gonna overload the Messis, the Neymars, the Mbappes. They're going to overload the obvious choices. But if you want the guy who might actually be putting goals in for Brazil and make the juice worth the squeeze, Vinicius is really good odds.
But with the amount of attacking quality Brazil have, is he going to start? I don't think
that's,
he will.
That's the rub. You don't know for sure he's going to be in the squad for every game. At the same time, if Brazil does have these lopsided games, he can come into these death moments when they're already up 4-0, and he'll just make it 8-0.
Yep, I see. I'm gonna do that. I'm definitely gonna have some money on that. That's definitely worth it. Kev, who's Golden Boot?
I'm glad that nobody else has said it so far. I'm going Memphis Depay. Number of reasons. He was a joint top scorer in the European qualifying, and plus they've got Qatar, Senegal and Ecuador. I reckon you could get a hat trick in any of them.
That's a good point. But I will say one thing. They don't have a natural number nine, and he's not a number nine. He plays off of it, which is why I think Cody Gakpo is going to have a great breakout tournament, and then he's going to rub our faces in it because we could have signed him for 20 million. After this tournament, he's going to be about 50 million after this tournament, and I think he'll get more goals than
we should have spent all of our just on him.
I should have done. But yeah.
Yeah, okay. I've got a couple of quizzes. It's called Y'all Say Tomato, We Say Arsehole. Or as the Americans would say, You Say Tomato, We Say Asshole. So, yeah, it's just this week I was teaching some of my students American and British English and the differences. We're a little bit more exposed, I think, to American culture than the Americans are to the British culture. Would that be fair to say?
Hey, now hold on. The Crown does really well on Netflix.
Well, because there's two of you, and I'm going to allow you to confer. You've got a little advantage, but Ray is a self-confessed Americophile, so it should be quite easy for you. Yeah, we'll start off with Tim and Greg then. So, I'll give you what you call it. You have to tell us what we call it. So, what do we call bachelor party?
Oh, is it a stag?
It is.
Yeah. It is the hen and stag party.
Yeah, you've preempted my next question, so I'll skip straight to the third. What do we call a hickey?
I know.
Of course you know.
Do you just call it herpes and call it a day?
Call a doctor.
I honestly have no idea.
Probably a love bite, isn't it?
Yes.
Ah, yeah. What do we call pickup lines? So yeah, it's a way to get your hickey, your love bite.
I don't know. I'm relying on Tim. Whether Tim is all knowing or.
Well, I would just go with swear words because it's probably your terms of endearment and affection. just swearing at somebody else and seeing if they they like you or not.
What do we say then, Marie?
Is it chat up?
It's a chat up line, yeah.
Yeah.
That just doesn't make any sense. What do you wait? I can talk to anybody. Are you guys just more like you're just more aware of the alphabet than I am, I guess?
Well, you can chat someone up.
Yeah, but I could chat anybody up. There are only specific people I'm trying to pick up.
I only pick up rubbish, you know. So yeah, your love bite. If you want to disguise it. What do we call a Band-Aid?
Oh, I used to know this.
Am I allowed to answer any of these?
No.
Not
until they have.
Band-Aid, I'm just going to say, oh, God.
Tim's cheating away.
it's probably something so easy and so obvious that I'll be like, well, it can't possibly be that. Like, do you just call it a wrap or something?
That's a sandwich, isn't it?
Well, we have 27 ways to say sandwich if you ever want to get into that.
So you're saying so fun fact, Band-Aid's actually a company, so it's a branded term, just kind of how like Frisbee is to flying disc. So I'm gonna go with a bandage.
We'd say a sticking plaster.
A plaster, yeah, a plaster.
Plaster. Yeah, you talk about a Band-Aid solution to something, we talk about a sticking plaster. All right, one more. Yeah, what do we call a crosswalk?
Oh, Abbey Road? is it just like something off the White Album? Well, yeah. Listen, I don't know how you Brits do with with your Jingo Django over there, all right?
Bingo, Rango, Jingo.
Yeah. A petty? You call it a petty?
I don't know what that is.
I'm going to go with something like a line over.
I've never heard of that. So.
Right?
I have no idea what a crosswalk is, but is it some sort of... It's not a sidewalk, is it? Is it a zebra crossing?
Yeah, pedestrian crossing.
Oh, so it is a petty.
Oh yeah, but if people What's say if you said pedestrian crossing, you people know exactly what it is.
Well, we've
over
got
here.
we got zebra, we got pelican, we got puffin.
They're all technically rather different, aren't they?
Yeah, well, some of them have got buttons. Some of them, like a zebra crossing or a zebra crossing, as you would call it, they have to stop as soon as they see it, like Abbey Road.
Yeah, I mean, in the United States, you're supposed to stop, but if you've been to New York City, you're taking your life in your own hands there.
All right, yeah, we've got four more. There's 10 each, okay? So what do we call a dumpster, the kind that you might put some buildings into? Yeah.
Well, I know you call trash just rubbish generally, right?
Yeah, but I mean the big metal ones, you can tell them the correct answer.
So what do you call an actual dumpster? Is it just Harry Maguire?
It's got a head like one, isn't it?
It's big. Is it too big? Like, is that too big? I'm gonna nominate Harry Maguire as my actual guess.
Tim, do you have anything to add?
It's a bin, so it'd be like a giant bin or like a skip bin or something like that.
Skip, yeah good.
Skip
bin. Yep.
Nice one. Okay. And yeah, it's another brand name, but yeah, what do we call scotch tape?
Sticky?
Tim?
Oh, geez. A bandage. Go with bandage again.
No?
Harry Maguire. No, is it sellotape?
Sellotape, that's it.
Huh.
Yeah, also a brand name. Okay, two more. How do you say counterclockwise?
Oh. Is it just, do you just go Australian? Because doesn't everything go backwards in Australia? when you flush the toilet in Australia, the water goes the other way.
Yeah, really we're not weird. Southern Hemisphere. Right?
Yeah, but I just don't know if you just refer to everything as Australian if it goes backwards. counterclockwise, I don't know.
Tim, have you heard us say this?
The other way.
Anti-clockwise.
Anti-clockwise. Pacifier. The kind you'd give a baby. What do we call that?
Oh, I think I actually know this one.
Go on, Greg.
Is it just something as simple as like a sucker?
What, you're going to surprise me then?
I thought I liked this a lot better when I knew what a stag party was.
Yeah. What my wife calls me all the time.
That sounds a dummy. A dummy, yes.
Yeah. Oh.
All right. Okay. Tim's just saved. You got 5 out of 10. So do you think,
Greg,
can you do better than that?
Yes.
All right. So what do they call bird watchers?
No idea.
Guys, y'all.
Yeah, I call them weird.
You don't call them birders.
Bird washer.
Oh, I've heard birders, but like I don't think it's ever been used casually.
So I've never heard anyone that's not an American say birder.
Bird watcher. Yeah. So bird watcher is.
I've never heard that before.
Yeah. All right. What do they say for hand luggage?
Carry on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That is correct.
I mean, it's correct if I'm going on a plane. I don't think I would ever call something a carry-on bag if I wasn't on a plane.
We'd call it an overnight bag as well.
Yeah, so I'd probably more commonly call it an overnight bag.
But, you know, I mean, specifically the luggage that you don't check in.
If I'm in an airport, it's a carry-on.
That's the one. All right. Curtains, the kind that you'd put up.
Drapes.
Yeah, be right there.
Yeah, because blinds are a little something different, where like they're not that actual material.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I reckon you maybe do call it sometimes the same as us, but what do they also call a laptop computer?
No.
Ah, gents, do the man hand.
I've only ever called it a laptop.
Yeah. Really?
For me, I mean, is it a handheld?
No, do you not call them notebooks?
Yeah, Mac is a type of laptop.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a notebook.
Yeah, the Chrome notebook is it like I would more commonly refer to that as like an iPad.
I don't feel bad about not knowing that one.
All right. Okay.
If you told me you were bringing your notebook over to watch football, I would think you're bringing a pen and paper.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
This should have been the entire podcast.
It's probably going to be. We might say I'd rather cut my throat with a blunt knife, but What would they call a blunt knife?
No, I don't know. No.
I'd say, I mean, if it's either butter knife or dull knife, right?
Dull. Yeah, dull.
Dull
knife.
Right.
Dull okay. knife. Butter knife or dull knife?
Not
yeah,
sharp.
Dull means boring. And where are we?
I mean, it also means boring here, but it does refer to if a knife isn't sharp, you could say it's dull.
Oh, okay.
Mm. How might they also, you might use your blunt knife or your dull knife to cut up some healthy food. What would they say? Maybe not healthy, but...
No? I'm sucking at this.
Am I right in saying that you sometimes say healthful?
Healthful?
Mm.
No.
I've never heard that. Yeah.
Because I listen to some American podcasts and they quite frequently say healthful. And
I think you're listening to some weirdos there, Kevin.
It could be. Is it like a food based podcast where they're using it as a term to describe like the mechanism
from a scientific
to eat
perspective?
Yeah, I could see that, but it's not in common day society.
Okay. All right. This one definitely is. What do they call a plug socket? So you can plug in your notebook computer.
A wall socket. Plug. I should know this.
Do you guys know what we're talking about?
I do. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This one I know confidently.
Plug socket. It's a plug socket.
No, it's a plug socket.
I don't know then. I'm going to kick myself with this one. I feel like I should know this. No, I don't know. I give up.
We're talking about an outlet, right?
Yeah. Outlet.
An electrical outlet.
Yeah, it's also, if you ever play pickup basketball, you hear a bunch of out of shape white dudes yelling, outlet, outlet, to try to get a pass down the court.
Yeah.
Yeah, also means a plug in the wall.
Oh, okay.
Wow, okay. So, Ray, you need to get all three of these to take it to sudden death.
Oh, fucking hell.
So, the item of clothing that Gareth Southgate made famous and popular, so what's a waistcoat?
Oh, a tank top. Pullover. No. Jacket, waistcoat, pullover.
You get one.
Cardigan.
One option, mate.
Is it one of them?
It's definitely not a cardigan because he's not
wearing
sweaters.
It's not any of them. Yeah. A cardigan is a full sweater.
Yeah.
So a waistcoat, yeah, like they wear at the snooker. Like,
yes.
Dinner jacket.
The jacket's the full jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's losing it.
Oh, fuck's sake. No, I don't know. No.
The vest.
Yeah. Oh, a vest. Just a vest. All right, yeah.
Just a vest.
Just easy.
Like, do you remember that Mr. Burns song?
See My Vest, yeah.
Yeah, it was a waistcoat.
Okay, yeah. I didn't really think about
it. It's funny that you would say waistcoat, because by implying coat, I'm thinking, like, in America, we would assume it has sleeves. If it doesn't have sleeves, it has to be a vest.
That's a good point, actually, yeah. It's not a coat.
All right. So, yeah, there was two left, but you can redeem yourself slightly. What do they call a staff room in the school?
Oh my God. It started off so well.
Welcome to my life, man.
Staff room.
You got this. You got this. I believe in you. You can do
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Tim.
I'm going to say it sounds a lot more swanky in an American school.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I thought I was going to do a lot better at this, but I've completely blown out. No, I don't know.
So staff room, I'm assuming you mean faculty room?
Teacher's lounge.
Teacher's lounge. Yeah.
See, I was going to say faculty, but I thought,
doesn't
no, that
sound nice.
Yeah, that's what they call like the staff and stuff, isn't it? The faculty.
But, yeah. I would, if you called it a staff room, I would have assumed you thought to say bathroom and would have told you where the bathroom was. Yeah, it's either teacher's lounge or faculty room, for sure.
One last one that I was going to give to Ray, but I'm going to flip it and give it to you, Eugene.
I bet I know this one.
Yeah, do you call it a traffic circle?
Oh, no, it's a roundabout.
Ah, okay, well, that's a good job I didn't ask that question then.
Now, if you're in New England, it's called a rotary.
That's, no,
as,
come on.
No, as someone that grew up in Connecticut, we only called them roundabouts.
Wow.
I mean, we're talking New Hampshire here, so it's a rotary. In Boston, it's a rotary.
Well, Boston's fucking weird, so I'll give you that one. Yeah. Have you ever seen someone lay out a map of traffic patterns in Boston? Someone was fucking trashed when they made roads.
It's the cow pass.
Other roads.
It's literally the cow pass, and then they just put roads over them. That's how it was.
It's nuts. You look at New York City, and while it's congested and crazy, it makes sense. Then you look at Boston, and it's like one road is going in seven different directions at the same time.
Come to Chicago, man. Everything is on a perfect grid, and it's fantastic. It's utterly fantastic.
The dream.
It's perfect.
All right. So, yeah, these are individual. So I'm going to give you four places, names of four different places. And you have to tell me whether they're in, or which one's in Wales, which one's in England, which one's in the USA, and which one is in Iran.
Ooh.
Oh, God.
Okay. So, Ray, I'll start off with you.
Mm-hmm.
Cox, my anus, Sodom, and Jism.
Wait, these are all places and they're all in those four countries?
Yeah, each of them are in one of the
okay, four. So Cox, I'm going to say, is in England. Jism is in is in Iran. My anus has got to be in the US. And Sodom would be Wales.
You've got it. Yeah, home run.
Nice. Yes! Hey!
All right, Greg.
Oh, hit me.
Plump, ass, felch, and thong.
I'll go felch, Wales, thong, Iran, ass, England, plump, United States.
Absolutely wrong. Plump is in Wales, ass is in Iran, thong is in Kent in England, and felch is in Michigan.
Oh.
Felch.
Who the thunk? Tim.
Let's do this.
Your choices are dick, droop, shit, and
So let's go with Dick is in Wales, Droop is in Iran, Shit is in the US, and Pant is in England.
I think they're all in Wales, to be honest.
Tim also, nothing there. Pant, I didn't give it to Ray because there's a lot of places that have got Pant in it. I can't remember what it means in Welsh, but yeah, that's in Wales. Yeah, shit is in Iran, Dorset, and Dick is in Pennsylvania.
Dick, Pennsylvania.
I would have thought shit was in the U.S. too, because Schitt's Creek got really big here. So yeah. I would have just figured.
It's Canada, though.
That's Canada. Oh, those fuckers.
Yeah. Well, I really want to go to shit Iran now. Oh.
I've wanted to go there since I discovered Microsoft in Carter.
I can't say I've ever had the desire to go to Iran. No. I'll be frank about that.
So I'm gonna say four place names. You're gonna have to tell me which group it is. You get one shot each. Okay,
we'll take it in turns.
Okay, so cum, shid, crap, and banjo. What group?
Oh shit. What
group?
We're gonna go with the H because it's gonna be Portugal, Uruguay, and the other ones. It sounds about right. I thought of immediately Portugal for it.
Nah,
so.
I'm gonna go Group G.
Group G is Group G.
Yeah.
Okay. For up to 4 points, can you match them to the countries?
Banjo, Cameroon. Shid is in Switzerland. Cum in Serbia. And the other one, Brazil.
Crap.
Crap, yeah, in Brazil. There we go.
Yeah, no, banjo is in Cameroon, but yeah, shid's in Serbia, cum is in Brazil, and crap is in Switzerland. You get an extra point. You're killing this one. I'll give you another one. Pussy, buggery, middle fart, and fat NASA.
I'll go Group E for that one. No way, one of those places has to be in Germany.
I'm gonna go E as well, because pussy's got to be Japan, right?
I know this one.
Come on then, Tim.
Whatever the group that has Denmark in it, because middle fart is in Denmark, and I knew that.
Group D.
All right, Group D, yeah. Go on then, Tim. Do you want to name the other three?
No, Fat Nasser is going to be, that's going to be Australia. Buggery is going to be...
France.
No, you started so well. Pussy is in France. Buggery mounts in Australia. And Fat Nasser's in Tunisia, but you did pick up a point.
Oh, Greg said buggery was in Australia.
Okay, tit, poop,
boob,
hell, and fun time.
Tit, hell, fun time. What was the fourth one?
Poop.
I'm going to go Group C.
I'll go Group H.
It is Group C, though.
Yeah! H.
Fun time is in Argentina. Tit is in Mexico. Poop is in Poland. And the other one is Saudi Arabia.
Nope.
Ah!
Yeah, I would have said hell is in Poland for sure.
Hell is in Poland.
Yeah.
Poops in Mexico. Tit is in Argentina. And Alfantime is in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, damn it.
All right, last one. Whore, penis, cunting, rectum.
There's no place called cunting, surely. But if there is, it's got to be Germany, right? cunting. Yeah, it's got to be Group E.
Oh, I would have said Group F.
Tim, what would you say?
Oh, yeah. Good point.
No, it's with Germany. I think it's Germany, too.
No, you're wrong. Ray, you get another go, then.
A.
Yes, it is A. Which
just because
which?
That's the only group you haven't said.
yeah, whore, penis, cunting, and rectum.
Whore, penis, cunting, and rectum. This isn't right, surely.
I bet you cunting's in the United States, because nobody thought twice about that one.
I think they could all be in the Netherlands. I don't know. Go on, tell me.
Rectum's in the Netherlands. Penis is, or piñas is in Ecuador. Cunting's, well, it's actually in the Gambia, but I counted it as Senegal. And Al-Hor is actually where we're playing against the United States, isn't it?
Oh, I thought it was Al-Kir. There you go. I told you my
Al-Hor. Can you match Spurt, Dildo, Tantan, and Big Fart?
Big Fart. These places can't be real.
They are. Big Fart is translated from the original language. But
okay, is it Morocco?
Big Fart's not in Morocco.
Shit.
Shit's in Iran.
Tantan's Canada.
So you're saying Tantan?
I bet you Squirt has got to be Croatia, right? Or like maybe it has a different pronunciation.
Mm, yeah, I could see that.
Tim's quite silent.
That's because he's watching the fucking football with the rest of the shit.
No.
Oh, there you go.
I agree with Greg, though.
No, yeah. Spurt's in Belgium. Dildo's in Canada. It's in Nova Scotia. Tantan's in Morocco. And Big Fart is translated from the Croat.
So all these places that you've just mentioned are now on my to-go list.
No, yeah.
I want to do that selfie in front of the sign. You are now in arse.
Well, I think I've been in Cum Brazil before, so I think I've got that one checked off.
Totally the childish names of the world.
Yeah. Oh, this is totally a different direction. I thought this America England fixture was going to go down. But yeah, it was good. It was funny. Thanks for that, Kev.
Yes. Yeah, I think, you know, I've lived most of my life in vain, because I've been to many of these countries and I haven't visited a single place. Haven't even been to Droop indoors, in it.
No, I've never been to Droop, but no. Okay. Right, I think that's it. We're going to go off and watch the rest of this game. There's only about 5 minutes left of it now, I think. Thanks to Greg for coming along, and Tim, of course, and Kevin. Thanks for that wonderful quiz.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And
yeah, best of luck to the US.
Up the Yanks.
Hmm. Oh, by the way, a quick question. Do you mind being called Yanks? Is that something that you get offended by?
No. Okay. If you were from Alabama or Mississippi and you were called a Yank, they would take offense to it. But I think Yankees are, this day and age, because it's been so many years, and by years, I mean it's 200 years or so post, we've made it our own. And it's, okay, it's unique to the world. So to me, I don't take offense to it. But like I said, if you lived in Mississippi, they called me that, and because I'm from Chicago, and that's about it. Yeah.
But we can both unite in calling them rednecks, right?
Yeah. For me, it's if a foreigner calls me a Yank, that's fine. You don't know any better. It's fine. If someone in New York City calls me a Yank, fuck you. I root for the Mets. And then if a Southerner calls me a Yank, I remind him who won the war and what that war was about.
Yep. There you go.
That's all good there. Thank you. But yeah, guys, thanks very much for coming on. It's been a blast.
Speaking of slavery, let's go and watch the World Cup in Qatar.
Yeah.
Right. And on that note, yeah, up the England, I guess.
Yeah. Fuck your tea. We're taking it back.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.